Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
We've been talking about the state Senate's police reform bill passed during the early hours of this morning. Now, one area of significant contention in the bill was whether to limit what's called qualified immunity. That's a legal doctrine that protects police and other public employees from lawsuits over constitutional violations. It's been both a lightning rod in local and national police reform debates and a source of confusion about what it actually means. Here's State Senator John Keenan, who opposed the bill's proposed limitations, arguing that legislators needed more time to study it.
In the context of what I've come to know, and more importantly, in the context of what I've come not to know, if somebody would ask me, does this do it? Does this get to the standard that we all think should be in place? My response is, I don't know.
So what exactly is qualified immunity, and why are many law enforcement officials trying to hold on to it while many advocates argue it should go away or at least be rolled back? Let's turn to Nancy Gertner, retired federal judge, WBUR legal analyst, and a senior lecturer at Harvard Law School. Welcome back, Judge Gertner.
Good to be on.
So this is gnarly, Judge Gertner. Just in trying to understand it deeper, this is the kind of legal depth we don't usually need to go into, but it's what everyone is talking about and struggling with. So in layperson's words, what is qualified immunity and how did it come about?
So the doctrine is a judge-made doctrine that came about in pretty much the late 1970s and early 1980s. And it was literally a concern that constitutional criminal law, in other words, the ways in which the Constitution limited or affected police behavior, that it was unfair because of new developments in constitutional law to have a police officer bound by those new developments. Famously, one judge said they shouldn't have to be, a cop on the beat shouldn't have to be reading the advance sheets, the ways in which people get notice of opinions. And it was really phrased in terms of a police officer could not anticipate legal developments. It was focused then on the big and new constitutional changes that were going on after the Warren Court and said, how could a police officer know about those kinds of changes? But over time, it has evolved into something really quite a bit different. It's not just saying a police officer couldn't have known what the Supreme Court decided yesterday about the Fourth Amendment, but it has come to be that the police officer, for him to be held liable, there had to have been an existing precedent on the specific fact in question. So it's not just big constitutional cases, but you need to have a case on the specific facts. Let me give you an example. There was a case of a SWAT team that fired tear gas grenades into a house carrying someone they wanted to arrest. That person wasn't there. That caused considerable damage. The Court of Appeals said, well, there's no qualified immunity because there was no precedent involving tear gas and houses. Now, there was precedent about the scope of searches, et cetera, but there was no specific precedent that dealt with how much should I deal with, tear gas going into a house, or a case of someone who shot at a dog in someone's, a police officer shot a dog trying to apprehend someone in a backyard and wound up shooting a young girl. And the court literally said that the child's right not to be accidentally shot in the leg is not clearly established. So what I'm saying is that over time, this became not how could a police officer have known, you know, the latest constitutional issue, but how could a police officer get excused if there was not an existing precedent involving the facts that are in his case? Well, there never is an existing precedent involving those specific facts.
So this has started as you couldn't possibly know, given how quickly things are changing, and there needs to be some protection there. But it is now, if the particular instance in question is not essentially codified just like that in case law, then essentially a civil lawsuit suit based on constitutional violations would be thrown out. Am I understanding
right.
correctly?
How could an officer have known not to throw tear gas into a residence? Well, there's an obligation that with respect to excessive force, to avoid excessive force. No, it isn't codified in the cases to say, oh, don't do this, don't do that, don't do that. Don't use excessive force. And that step was a reasonable application of the law.
Okay, so why is it front and center in the current police reform debate?
Well, what happens is that the qualified immunity entitles a judge to dismiss a case without it ever getting to a jury. So while a jury might want to talk about, might get the issue of what comprises excessive force or what comprises an unfair search, qualified immunity entitles a police officer who's being sued to move to dismiss, and the case is then gone. And it's gone in a way that is particularly troubling. It's gone in a way, so the judge is supposed to decide, or at one point was supposed to decide, was the plaintiff's rights violated? And then the second question is, was the law clearly established? Over time, and because of the Supreme Court, judges no longer ask the first question, no longer answer the first question, whether someone's rights were violated. So that meant the law is not ever going to be established even going forward, because the case after case was saying essentially,
just gets
I don't know whether
out.
He did anything wrong, but it wasn't clearly established. So the law wasn't even providing.
Go on. Well, I want to pick up for a minute on the first half of what you were talking about there about, you know, how far suits go. We spoke yesterday with Larry Calderoni, who's the president of the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association. And we were talking about the state Senate's bill, qualified immunity. He stressed that many people misunderstand what qualified immunity does. And he went on to say that citizens can still sue police officers even with qualified immunity. Let's listen to him.
Qualified immunity does not stop you from suing a police officer. Police officers are sued when they do something wrong. It happens, unfortunately, because every place has officers that do things wrong, and all professions have people that do things wrong. And if we violate the law as police officers, we're charged criminally. And if we're found guilty, like every other citizen in the Commonwealth, we go to jail and we pay the penalty.
Now, on the other hand, you heard, I think, Rahsaan Hall before the break when he was on talking about the bill last week. He said that qualified immunity is tantamount now to complete immunity in many cases. So what's your reaction to Calderoni there, and what is the essence of qualified immunity now?
Well, the notion that a police officer who does something that comprises a crime will be punished and go to jail, well, is true, although we recognize that doesn't happen very often, as we saw in the George Floyd case. But we're not talking about criminal prosecution here, because that, to some degree, is the most extreme example of wrongful conduct. We're talking about a civil suit if someone violated your constitutional rights. It may not comprise a crime, but it was essentially violating your constitutional rights. He did something wrong. He went outside the boundaries of what the Constitution allows. To say that people can sue, yeah, you can sue, and it will be dismissed if it doesn't fit what these are, in my view, absurd requirements. So it'll be dismissed. That means that lawyers won't take your case because they're likely to be dismissed, and you won't get very far. And we're talking about, this is like constitutional malpractice. It's as if saying the only way you can deal with a doctor that left his instruments in your body after the surgery is if it's a crime. Well, we're not talking crime. We're talking about civil damages for your violation of a constitutional right. So the fact that people can be sent to jail doesn't control conduct. What controls conduct is his lawsuits.
So I want to go back for just a second. I may have misunderstood you, but it sounded a minute ago like you were implying that the George Floyd case has been settled, has been tried, but that is not just for our listeners' sake, that is not yet the case, although I may have misunderstood you there.
No, no. What I was saying is we saw what it took to bring criminal charges in that case. That's what I meant by and so the criminal penalty is appropriately, you know, the for the most extreme conduct. And is our most extreme punishment. We're now talking about civil liability, which is a lawsuit to gain damages for, you know, an illegal search, for an illegal prosecution, for excessive force. And that's a different matter.
Like your tear gas in a house example.
Tear gas in a house or shooting a child when you were aiming at the dog and had no right to sue the dog, to shoot the dog. So, I mean, those examples are really rife, where essentially courts are saying, you may have done something wrong. It wasn't clearly established because we don't have a case on point, and therefore the police officer gets off. And that means that bad conduct isn't controlled.
There's one more piece to this I want to get at, because in talking with the various sides of the police reform bill over the last few days, the argument on two sides that we've heard is, on one side, this puts undue financial and civil risk on police officers and will curb their behavior, make them overly cautious, or make them question choices in the field when it is neither safe nor appropriate for them to do that because they'll be worried about liability. And then on the other side, we've heard the argument, there is a thing called indemnification that makes that essentially a false argument. Could you comb that out for us?
It is a false argument. 99.8% of cases that are brought, I've looked this up, constitutional claims against police officers are paid for by the government or even sometimes the union. In other words, the municipality or the state will pay whatever damages are assigned to the police officer. So there is really no financial penalty at all. And what you're talking about is having a range of conduct that may well be wrong that is broader than the range of conduct that we allow now, and allowing those cases to go to trial before a jury. So it's really not an impediment to the police at all, any more than malpractice actions against doctors keep doctors from, you know, doing surgery. The good doctors do not have a problem.
So the other piece of that is, there has been an argument that there is a chilling effect, even though you've just addressed this question of indemnification, that could affect police officers' decisions. The Worcester Police Union went so far as to say, quote, "With the end of qualified immunity, an officer is more protected under the law by doing absolutely nothing to help you," end quote. What is your take on that?
Well, as I said, I think that makes that's really the usual kind of scare tactics that the police use whenever there are efforts to curb their power. The fact that those who are engaged in malpractice can be, you know, in a, like a doctor or a lawyer, can be sued for it and wind up with damages against them, doesn't stop people to being doctors or lawyers. It makes them exercise more care. And that's exactly what we're trying to do. So that's just simply absurd. You know, if they think twice before they violate someone's constitutional rights, rather than, as Judge Sotomayor just said in a case where she dissented, she says, with qualified immunity, it's the wrong signal. Shoot first and think later and count on being exonerated. And
so
that's
I want to bring that in this last question for you, because police work is not the same as many other professions. In fact, it does involve shooting at times. It involves life and death stakes at times for the officer and also for the civilian. So the stakes across the board are high. If we want to legally hold law enforcement accountable and also protect the needs and interests of law enforcement officers on the job, what is the right approach to that as we go forward working on police reform?
Well, the Massachusetts bill was not eliminating qualified immunity. It essentially said that a police officer, not the plaintiff, but the police officer, had to show that what he did was reasonable, that it fit within the reasonable view of the law. And that meant, and that's a different standard than, is there a case somewhere in the law books that deals precisely with this conduct? So it's not eliminated. And a police officer that was in, that does his job and exercises his responsibility in a reasonable way, and a jury would decide that, it won't be a problem. And then even if he didn't, as long as there's indemnification, he will have simply suffered, I guess, the indignity of being sued, but no one's losing their house.
And that is Nancy Gertner, retired federal judge, WBUR legal analyst, and senior lecturer at Harvard Law School. Thanks for helping us walk this through today, Judge Gertner. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.